Shalom.
We are bilingual.
We're icons, don't you know?
Of course.
Hi, guys. Highly Caffeinated is back. And I think, if I'm not incorrect, this is our last episode of the year.
I think so.
So, you know, we hope you guys miss us after this episode because, you know, we're so entertaining, obviously. But, you know, let's just jump right into it. So the Oscars happened this week.
Oh, yeah.
There's lots so much to debrief happened. From that.
Yeah. Okay, I want to know, what Oscar movies did you watch first?
Okay, I watched Licorice Pizza.
Okay.
Coda.
Mm-hmm.
Dune.
Mm-hmm.
Let me pull up the Best Picture nominees so I know exactly what I watched. Okay, I'm pulling them up right now. Okay, so I watched, Don't Look Up, Dune, okay. West Side Story, Licorice Pizza, and Coda.
Okay, I saw Coda, Don't Look Up, Dune, Licorice Pizza, Power of the Dog, and West Side Story.
Mm-hmm.
And then I watched The Eyes of Tammy Faye, which was...
Oh, how was that?
Oh my god, it was so good.
My mom was, really liked that movie.
Oh my god, I thought it was like... I was like, this is actually so good. Hold on.
My parents really didn't like The Power of the Dog. Like, they were, both of them didn't like it.
Yeah, me and my roommate Celia, we watched it because, like, normally I just watch the Oscar movies by myself, but she was like, oh, I want to see this movie. Like, do you want to watch it together? So we watched it. First of all, so much animal cruelty. Like, obviously it's not real, but it was like, they should have put a content warning before because there was a lot of, like, really disgusting stuff with, like, bunnies and, like, cows and like all this stuff that was just like really, really gross, that had I known that before, I just wouldn't have been as like scared and surprised when like that stuff happened. And then it was beautifully shot. Like, I think Jane Campion did like a brilliant job in terms of like directing. I just think that this Benedict Cumberbatch was really good. So was Cody Smith McPhee. Kirsten Dunst was okay. Jesse Plemons was good, but I mean, his character doesn't really have that much depth. Kirsten Dunst was just like, I don't know, there was just something off about the movie that kind of just, we couldn't really get into it. Like, it was really good in terms of, like, I think that Jane Campion definitely deserved to win Best Director, because, like...
I heard it was a very slow-moving movie.
Yes, it's really long, but, like, the cinematography was beautiful, the costuming was beautiful, the way it was, like, made, like, constructed was really well done. The soundtrack was amazing. So I definitely think that she did a brilliant job of directing it. I just think that because it's also based off of, like, a book, and the book doesn't seem like it's terribly, like, interesting. Like, it's mostly, like, it seems like it's about the author. So I feel like there wasn't a whole lot of, like, creativity that they could do with it. It's pretty much, like, they just tell the story. And it wasn't particularly interesting to me.
Yeah, something actually about the fact that you said it's a very long movie. I saw this TikTok the other day by this girl I follow. Her name's Jace. She goes by Jay Stubbs on TikTok. And she's like one of the – she like makes a lot of Marvel content and she makes a lot of movie content. And she said something really interesting, which is, you know, the Oscars are supposed to be celebrating movies. Yet in the past, like maybe in the past years of the Oscars – all they do is make fun of the movies that are nominated that they're supposed to be celebrating. Like, I understand it's like they're, because she was saying, you know, it used to be about, you know, celebrating what they've done, but now there's the celebrity culture of like self-deprecation and like making fun of yourself because you are a celebrity. But now in turn, they've made it seem like the movies aren't good, but these are supposed to be the most celebrated, well-received movies of the year. But they're also making fun of the exact things that people are literally TV to watch them. And it's interesting because, you know, people like to make fun of celebrities because, you know, they're supposed to be these like super high-class people and like above all of us. But like them making fun of themselves almost seems in a way sometimes – also if the jokes are bad, they seem kind of tone-deaf.
Yeah,
and a lot of the jokes just don't hit anymore. And I didn't think that that Wanda Sykes, Regina Hall, and Amy Schumer did a bad job or anything.
Yeah,
but
me
either. I'm just sick of the. I didn't think they did a bad job, but I don't know. I'm just sick of the really bad jokes that people make because I don't know who writes them, but they're just not good anymore. Like in terms of getting like a full belly laugh and like the entire thing actually being good. There's like a few good jokes here and there, but I don't find any Oscar hosts anymore who just make me like excited for them to come back on screen so I can see them like do more jokes and stuff, because it's not that good anymore.
Yeah, I'm like trying to think of Oscar hosts.
It's kind of a letdown.
But yeah, I feel like it's been a while since there's been like a good Oscar host. I'm trying to think. Yeah, I don't know. I didn't think they did a bad job. I think that
me neither. I just don't think it was great.
Yeah, I don't think it was great. I think
they also got completely overshadowed by like what happened between Will Smith and Chris Rock, which we'll get into after we discuss like the winners.
The winners. Okay.
Yeah. So, Dune, do you want to go from like the smaller categories up or the like bigger categories?
Well, all the smaller categories are Dune.
That's true. Okay, so we'll just go from – we'll start from Best Picture because it's the first one that came up on the Vanity Fair website for winners. Coda won Best Picture. Okay, here's my thought. I thought it was great representation for the deaf community. I thought it was, like, very sweet, like, very family-like oriented, and I really like that. In terms of the screenplay in that movie, I didn't think it was, like, amazing. I thought it was the story was good, and I thought the acting was great, like all like great performances all around. But in terms of the screenplay, I don't know how I feel about all the writing in the movie, because I feel like there are other movies which had better writing.
Who won for best original screenplay again?
Here's screenplay. Belfast.
Okay, well, I haven't seen Belfast. I'm sure it was great. Because like I'm trying to think compared to the other Best Picture nominees, like I'm trying to think because it's very rare that a movie like Dune, a very stacked science fiction movie, will do like, despite the fact that I thought it was like brilliantly made, brilliantly written, I thought it was a beautiful movie. Those movies typically don't get that kind of recognition. So like I'm not surprised that they didn't win. Nightmare Alley, I didn't watch. Kind of seemed bad.
I didn't see Nightmare Alley. My parents watched it. They said it was good, but it took them like a little while to get through. They said it's like not Guillermo del Toro's best, like especially compared to something like The Shape of Water. Like,
yeah, it's not. West Side Story was really good. I loved it, but I mean, it's a musical. Musicals never win. Mm-hmm.
And I would also say that because West Side Story has already been done, even if the reimagining was like exemplary, which I was amazed by it, I loved it, there was always going to be a slight chance that it would win because it's already been done.
Yeah.
And it's not a brand new story, it's just a new take, a newer take on it, which was great. Yeah. I just didn't think it really had a chance, even if I wanted it to, because it really is an Oscars worthy type movie.
Yeah.
But because it already had its time. But I was over the moon that Ariana DeBose won Best Supporting Actress.
Oh,
I was
crossing my fingers. I screamed.
Me too. I jumped out of my seat.
Literally.
I was so excited for her.
So cool. I'm so happy for her. So deserving.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. So talented.
I can't wait to see what she does next.
Me too.
Like, the way she moves is so, like, fluent. And, like, I just, like, her fluidity through her, like, movement. And then she can act and she can sing. And, like, it's like, she's, like, a genuine triple threat.
Yeah.
And I just think she's like great and amazing. And I hope she gets to do a lot more.
Yeah.
First nomination, first Oscar in one go. Yeah. Good job.
Okay, I'm like looking at the other nominees. I'm like Licorice Pizza, I really liked it, but I don't think it's Best Picture worthy.
No,
I think it's good.
No, I don't think so. I kind of do wish Alana Haim had gotten a nomination for it, though.
She was really good. Drive My Car, I know, is supposed to be really good.
I have not watched it yet. Didn't have the time.
I need to watch it.
Yeah.
The 3-hour thing kind of spooked me.
Same. I'm the same way.
I was like, I don't know if I want to sit through that. I personally really, really loved Coda. Like, I thought it was really well done. And I thought it was
very, very heartwarming. And I thought it was great representation. And I'm happy for them, especially that it won. Because it opens up the doors for more movies like that to be made. But every movie has its flaws. That's the thing about the Best Picture like nominations and like winners.
They're all good.
Like they're all good in different ways, and it's really hard to choose from one because like one's a musical, one's like a satiric comedy, one's like dark, one's sci-fi. Like especially this year, they were all so different. So yeah. I feel like you could make an argument for what for most yeah, for like really any of them, because you could say that like Nightmare Alley had like amazing like production design, even though it didn't actually even though it didn't win for production design,
but Dune, I mean, look, I'm surprised because Dune deserved all of its awards. Was he nominated for Best Director?
No, he was not, which I think is,
I think he should have been.
I cannot believe that he was not nominated for Best Director.
Yeah, I'm like, Dune swept every single other category, and I think all of those other categories, without him being such a brilliant director, they would not, like, I just think...
Exactly, it was his direction that really, that led the way.
Yeah.
So, and again, I didn't see Power of the Dog, but I am happy that Jane Campion won for Best Director, because, you know, like, females, and, like, the fact that, like, only three women have ever won Best Director in the history of the Oscars, like, it's really a step forward for that to keep happening, but I just think that he should have, that he should have got the recognition from a nomination standpoint. The fact that he didn't is kind of insane to me.
Yeah.
Like you said, none of that could have been possible without his direction. So I don't understand like the correlation between all those nominations, but him not getting a Best Director one. It confused me so much.
I'm also like, I'm looking at the other people who are nominated for Best Director, and like Paul Thomas Anderson, Licorice Pizza was good. I don't think it was his best. I don't think, like, I don't think if he had won, I would have been very, very surprised.
I only found it this year that Paul Thomas Anderson has been like with, has been with Maya Rudolph for years. I didn't realize that that's why she was in the movie.
That's why she was there. I was like, why is she here? She didn't do anything.
Like, I'm happy that she gets roles and stuff, but I didn't know that she was like in I didn't know that she was with him. But anyways,
Steven Spielberg,
costume design Cruella, I was over the moon because I was obsessed with all of the costumes in that movie.
I haven't seen it, but I know the costumes were amazing.
It is so good. It is a really well made movie. Like, I will say that I'm kind of confused with the whole cinematic universe of like Disney villains live action movies, but I will say that Cruella, regardless of that, was actually a genuinely well made movie with great, like, with great script, great acting, especially great costumes, which is the reason won the Oscar. It was really, really well done. It's a great watch if anybody wants to watch it. If you're thinking about it, go watch Cruella. It's really good.
Yeah, I do need to watch it. I'm so happy that The Eyes of Tammy Faye won for makeup and hair design, because oh my god, it was so cool. I also, like, usually it's biopics that win, just because, like, it was, because I, like, knew about the whole, like, the story of The Eyes of Tammy Faye is about Tammy Faye and, like, her husband and their, like, evangelical Christian television network, and how they, like, literally scammed people out of, like, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I knew about it before, just because, like, I find all that, like, culty religious stuff very interesting, so I'd like watched YouTube videos about it before, so I was very excited for it. And it was like scary how accurate both Andrew Garfield and Jessica Chastain were, like, physically to the real people, like the way that their whole face, like even Andrew Garfield, when you see him in the movie, you're like, that's Andrew Garfield, but the way that they just, like, he was carrying himself, the way they did his hair, even like they added like stuff on his face, it was just,
I saw in the trailer the prosthetics they put on both of their faces was like insane.
Yeah, they
and both, I saw a clip of her with like permanent lip liner and like fake permanent lip liner and like, you know, like eyeliner, that stuff. I thought that even from the smoke stuff I saw from that, it seemed that it was very deserving to win that category.
Yeah. And I think Jessica Chastain also was very deserving for Best Actress. She was like, I think it's one of my favorite performances of her. Like, she completely transformed. Like, I didn't even recognize her. Her voice changed. She was very, very, very good in The Eyes of Tammy Faye. I highly recommend going to watch it.
And you know what I appreciate about the fact that she won, even though I haven't seen the movie, multiple people have told me that, like, she did an amazing job in it.
Yeah.
I appreciate the fact that she won the Oscar because she deserved it, but also at the same time, she's been nominated, like, a few times, and she genuinely deserved it from this performance. I mean, she deserved it before, but I like the fact that she didn't get it because she's been nominated enough times and they're like, we're gonna give it to her this time. I like how, like, even though she's been nominated Yep. Because I like how even though she's been nominated in the past, this genuinely was a performance deserving of an Oscar.
Yeah.
Because it makes me be like, yes, this is what the Oscars are about. Someone has been nominated before, but they won it because they deserved it. I just think that in terms – I'm not saying that – again, I have not seen King Richard. Like, this is not about the situation. I don't – I'm sure Will Smith put in a great performance. I've heard he did. But – I heard that, like, overall it wasn't his – like, it wasn't groundbreaking, right?
Yeah.
So my problem is that, yes, sometimes the Academy does this thing where, like, someone's super deserving of something but they don't get it, and they get nominated time and time again and they don't get it, and they're eventually like, okay, we're going to give it to them this year. But that's not okay in my opinion, because it's going against exactly what the Oscars are supposed to be, which is somebody winning an award for being the best in their category. Mm-hmm. The Oscars are not lifetime achievement awards. They're best actor in a leading role, best actress in a leading role, and so on and so forth. So I don't understand why they keep on doing this thing where they keep on giving people like these lifetime achievement ones when it's like, okay, but you should have given it to them when they deserved it. That's your fault.
Yeah.
And also like, didn't Samuel L. Jackson get like an honorary Oscar this year? So why aren't but it was an Oscar. It was an Oscar though.
Yeah, something like, has he won an Oscar before?
No, he is not.
Oh, I'm pretty sure. But I mean,
again, I'm not saying that Will Smith was not deserving of winning the Oscar. I have not seen his performance, and I'm not going to say that he didn't. But I also know that a lot of people were saying that in terms of performances this year, Andrew Garfield had the best performance in that category. Yep. So I don't understand why the Oscars keep doing the giving people awards because they didn't give it to them yet. If someone didn't put in the best performance compared to someone else, give the person with the best performance the award, because that takes away all of like what the category is about, and it bothers me a lot.
Yeah, I think even Benedict Cumberbatch, like, I wasn't a huge fan of The Power of the Dog, but his the movie also like makes you very uncomfortable when you're watching it. Like, you're very like, I want this movie to be over. But he was like, he played a horrible, horrible person, but he did it so well. Like, this is like, I think the best performance I've ever seen from him. It was truly, truly like brilliant and very, very well acted.
I'll need to see the movie then. I'll need to see it soon.
Yeah, like, I think in terms of like just who had the best acting performance, I think it's definitely Benedict Cumberbatch or Andrew Garfield.
I will always watch the Oscars because I have like a, I feel like a lot of people have like an emotional connection to it, because I know that I grew up watching all the award shows every my family, so obviously. Yep. I'm going to continue to watch them. Also, like, since we're both film majors, I feel like it's obviously a whole other thing where it's like, well, obviously we want to watch who, like, wins the most prestigious awards of award season.
Yeah, and I just enjoy watching all the movies leading up to it. Yeah. Like, it's fun.
Yeah, and then, like, trying to, like, map out time so you can watch every single one or try to get close to. Yeah. Okay, so, yeah, we already kind of talked about Best Director, Jane Campion. Best Original Song. So that was won by Billie Eilish and Phineas for No Time to Die from James Bond. Mm-hmm. I actually read something that said that she was the first person who was born in the 21st century to win an Oscar, because no one born after the year 2000 had won an Oscar yet.
That's cool. I think that they were very deserving of it. I agree. I thought the song, even just like if you think about how the song was crafted – like, not just from Which One Sounds Better, but, like, the way it was such –
the production. So yeah. I mean, didn't Hans Zimmer work on it with them? Or he at least
– Yeah, he helped them compose, like, the, track. But if you think, the way that her and Phineas were able to, like, blend in her style of music with, like, something as epic as James Bond and that whole, like – you know, making a Bond song is a huge thing. Like, people are always going to remember that song. It has.
I also thought her performance at the Oscars was
amazing. I think she did great.
They both did a great job.
Very talented people.
It's pretty amazing what they do together, and like how just what they've achieved over only a couple of years. It's like very monumental. I also think that another reason that they won is because it feels like it's a part, you know, it's been like 60 years of James Bond, right? So it's also in the fact that this was Daniel Craig's last movie. It felt very fitting. It just fit into this like franchise and this entire thing, and it just felt right. Whereas, like, yeah. I think the song from Encanto was wonderful, and I think, you know, if it won, it would have been deserving 100%. But mm-hmm. I just think that something about the feel of the Bond song just makes it feel like an Oscar-worthy song.
Yeah.
And there's just, yeah, something about the feel of the song just feels right. And I just think Billie's kind of almost like sultry vocals just really works well within the context with the of a Bond song.
And oh, it was, my God. It's beautiful. The production of it,
yeah.
The performance beautiful. Of it live, the way that she, I like that she decided to like belt parts of it instead of, because she like sings very like softly in the song. And I like that she took the liberty to kind of like belt some of the song and make it more like grand. I think really, really fit the song well, especially at the Oscar stage. So I was like, I was very happy with the changes that she made to singing it live.
I agree. You know, what's also underrated though, the way that Phineas harmonizes with her, but like yeah. very, very like low. Yeah, thank you. Subtly. So you can hear him slightly and it complements Billie's voice well, but it doesn't yeah. overpower. And I feel like it's underrated what he does in that.
Oh, waiting for a song of them two together.
And playing the piano. Yes. Yeah. Oh my God. And Phineas's new song, Naked, it's really good. You should go listen to it. I actually don't listen to Phineas's music. That was like the first song of his I've ever genuinely listened to. And I thought it was great.
Listen to his whole new album, Medieval, literally 10 out of 10, biggest banger on the planet.
Best score, Hans Zimmer, Dune.
It's so deserving.
Did you see that picture of him? Like, because he was somewhere else because he wasn't at the, it was like 2 a.m. and he found it, he won. Yeah. There's this adorable picture of him.
I think
the score for Dune was insane. It complemented the movie more than I've ever like felt about the score in another score. Movie.
It was so smart the way that he just, it wasn't just like, oh, here are a beautiful orchestra playing a really beautifully written composition and we're just going to put it back. It was like, it was very deliberate, and the way that he like included little motifs for each of the characters and each of it was just, you could tell that he spent a lot of time thinking about it and that he really knew the story he wanted to tell with the music, because when you're watching it, like, I felt myself like a lot of the time just like focusing on the music, because sometimes in the movie there's not really talking and it's just kind of like things are just happening and you're kind of observing it, or like it's like
the visuals in that movie are insane landscapes. Too the cinematography, yeah, the music, I'm so happy it won for cinematography. Oh my God,
yeah, it was just it was a beautiful, stunning movie. It was just
the thing I like about Dune is that I appreciate the fact that even if you don't particularly like love the movie, you can appreciate every single thing that went into it enough to be like, yeah, I know that it deserves this. Because when I was watching it, I need to watch it again, and especially after watching videos explaining what I saw, I definitely appreciated what I saw a lot more. But I remember like watching the movie, and when I was confused, I still had a beautiful cinematography and like that beautiful score to listen to.
Yeah.
And just overall, it was just a beautiful thing to look at. Yes. Which I really appreciate about the movie, because sometimes you can have a movie that has a great script, great acting, but you're like, but where's like the cinematography? Where's the things that I want to look at that make me, you know, that make it visually pleasing?
Yeah.
So
show, not tell.
Dune sweeped. Best visual effects. Very deserving.
Did they get anything else? They got like sound design.
Yeah. Oh, let's deserving. Best supporting actor, Troy Kotsur for Coda. Good.
I think he was definitely deserving of that. I think he gave a brilliant performance. I think the story was also like Coda. When I watched it, I thought it was going to be like, oh, this like cute little heartwarming story about this family, but they added so much more complexity to it, where they could have just been like, here is a story about a family, because like Coda means like child of deaf adults, and they could have kind of just told like a very surface level story, but I felt like when I was watching it, there was so much more to it than just like, this is a girl who her entire family is deaf. There were so many other things that were going on in the story that I was also interested in, and I think his character is definitely one of them. I thought that
my favorite scene from him that I actually think won him the Oscar mm-hmm. was I don't want to spoil, I don't want to like, okay, it's not actually, it doesn't matter, the movie's been out. Okay, so there's a scene well, you've watched the movie too,
yeah,
when, so basically the daughter, she's like a part of a choir, and she had just done a performance, and obviously they did this really cool point of view yeah. thing where obviously like she's hearing and her parents and brother are deaf, and they completely just get rid of the sound, so you see from the point of view of her family that they can't hear her sing. They're watching it, but they can't hear her. And later yeah. on in the night, they come home from this performance, and the Troy Kotsur, who plays her father, asks her to sing for him, and he puts his hands on her like neck so he can feel her vocal cords yeah. while she's singing, and that scene made me cry. Because he wanted to, you know, be able to appreciate the fact that his daughter can sing, but he can't hear it.
Yeah, I rarely cry in movies, but I was like full waterworks.
I think that scene won him the Oscar.
Yeah, to be honest. I think that was the fact that, like, even though there's not, like, she's just singing and he's just kind of like watching her, but you could just tell that this was something that both characters, they needed so badly. Mm-hmm. She needed to feel that her parents were proud of her, and that they thought that, like, that what she was doing, that they were like happy
that it was worth something for her. Yeah.
Yeah, and he just wanted to experience this something that his daughter loves so much, but he couldn't, and they found a way for both of them to just like have this pure moment just filled with joy for both mm-hmm. people. And it just, like, I don't know, it just felt like such a beautiful moment between the two characters of, like,
I agree.
I don't know. It was just like, I don't know. I loved it. The way it was written was really well. Definitely like top five favorite scenes in a film ever.
Yeah, definitely made me cry. I mean, I cry yeah. a lot at movies, to be honest, but yeah, I won't shy away from that. I cry at like everything. Anyways, so what was next? Okay, so we'll talk about best actor, and then we'll talk about what yeah. happened with the best actor. So Will Smith won best actor for King Richard. Most people knew that this was going to happen. He's been nominated for I don't know how many Oscars before, but like everyone was like, well, it's like he put in a great performance, and it's Will Smith's time, and he's going to win. And lo and behold, he did. But like 10, 15 minutes? Was that it? 10, 15, 20 minutes before he won this Oscar. Something happened.
What happened?
Do you want to take it away?
Sure. So we all know Chris Rock, beloved comedian of Grown Ups. It's basically like the only place I know him from is from like Adam Sandler movies. And the zebra from Madagascar. stellar role, by the way. I love Marty, the zebra.
Yeah, he put his entire zebra-sy into that role. Sorry.
So Chris Rock, you know, they at the Oscars, you know, they tend to make some jokes about the actors that are there, sometimes in good taste, sometimes in bad, but you know, it's nothing that the actors haven't dealt with before and that they don't know is coming, you know? So Chris Rock comes out, makes some like jokes about whatever, and then he like makes a joke about Jada Pinkett Smith, like Will's wife, and says, oh, she looks like G.I. Jane.
Ask her if she's doing like a G.I. Jane 2 reboot, because in that movie, Demi Moore, who played G.I. Jane, I'm pretty sure, I think it was her, has a shaved head.
Yeah.
And basically, Jada Pinkett Smith has made it known in public, like in like the public sphere on the internet, that she has alopecia.
Yeah.
So she's shaved her head. And let me just say this from the get-go. The joke was obviously in very poor taste, and I think we can all acknowledge that.
Yeah.
And then after that happened, so first of all, let's just talk about like the series of events. Chris Rock comes up on stage, he makes a few jokes, he says the word Macbeth in a theater, which if you know, you know.
You can't say Macbeth in a theater.
You cannot say Macbeth in a theater. It. Yep. And then basically he makes the joke in poor taste about Jada. And then the camera cuts to Will Smith. And at first he's laughing because maybe he didn't get the joke, or maybe he thought it was funny until he saw his wife's face. Jada kind of rolls her eyes at the joke. we don't see them again until all of a sudden you see Chris Rock kind of standing on the stage and Will Smith comes up to him, slaps his face, kind of swaggerily walks back to his seat, and then he's – and then the – for me, the – I guess because obviously we're in – yeah, the broadcast cut out, but I actually was – but we – I think we were all able to see his mouth. Yeah, and I was – yeah, I was on the edge of my seat, and you can – I'm not going to say the word, but I'll do the variation. Yeah. So – and then you can see Will Smith's mouth move, and he says, "Get my wife's name out of your effing mouth."
Yeah,
and then and he does it like twice for good measure. You also next to him, you could see Lupita Nyong'o's face just dropping because I think because everyone was unsure if it was scripted or not. Because after Will Smith like smacked Chris Rock, he had sort of a smirk on his face, and like Chris Rock laughed, and I think most of us thought, oh, it was a joke. He went up to him, he fake smacked him, and then went back down. Mm-hmm. And then we realize the broadcast cuts out, obviously.
Once they muted
and then
we're like,
that was real. Oh,
and
okay.
Then Chris Rock had to then read out all the nominees for the best documentary.
And can I say, I feel so bad for Questlove because his moment and his beautiful, let me say, beautiful, beautiful speech that he, like, for winning that documentary was tainted by that moment. Whether you think, whatever you think of that moment or not, you can ignore, like, we can all acknowledge that his, you know, his wonderful speech was completely tainted by what happened before. I mean, a lot of the ceremony is like Ariana DeBose is making history for being the first like Afro-Latina, like openly queer woman to win Best Supporting Actress. And that was also overlooked. Yeah. Most things in that ceremony were overlooked by the fact of what happened between Will Smith and Chris Rock.
Yeah.
Which is sad because there's a lot of good things that happened on that stage.
Yeah. And I want to preface, no matter what Chris Rock said, violence, not the answer. No, we don't hit people because we're angry. We
and guys, this is our podcast. These are our opinions. You don't have to agree with us. But taking whatever out of the context, I don't know if I would call it like, I mean, it is technically assault, whatever, but he did like, you know, our parents teach us violence is not the answer. If someone makes you mad, you're not supposed to physically hurt them.
You can
so,
have a conversation,
in my opinion,
like two grown ass adults
had every right to pull Chris Rock aside in that moment, or take the mic away from him and say, "Hey, my wife is alopecia. That joke was in poor taste. I hope everyone knows that. You know, she has a medical condition, and that was not the right way to. You know, you shouldn't have made a joke about that." But instead of explaining exactly why him and his wife were offended at that joke, he instead decided to go up on national television in front of millions of viewers and smack someone. So regardless of what you think, he went up on the classiest night in Hollywood and smacked someone in the face. And it was, you know, it was still violence. He was still putting your hands on someone else.
There were much better ways to have handled that.
Yeah.
I think.
And again, he had every single right to be mad at him. He had every single right to call him 100%. Out for what he did. Yeah. And I think he should have pulled him aside and talked to him. Mm-hmm. But again, he smacked him, which made everyone, you know, it was jarring. You saw someone smack someone on live television. It was insane.
Yeah. I just,
and, you know, these are supposed to be classy people. This is like the most, you know, this Hollywood's A-listers on like the, you know, most important night in movies of the year. And that happened. Yeah. Everyone's talking about it and everyone has opinions on it, which is allowed. Everyone can have their opinion on the situation. This is just ours.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I was just like, these are like, this is a grown adult. Like, he's like, has grown children and he is like throwing a hissy fit. And I'm like, he can be angry. I would be angry if I was Will Smith. If I was Jada,
he had every single right to be angry at the joke. Exactly. And again, Chris Rock's joke is in very, very poor taste. No one's saying that that's not true.
But I do not think that justifies violence. I think there is very little that justifies violence, especially between you know, they are two respected people in the world. And I don't know, the whole thing, it just made me mad. I was like, okay, like Chris Rock, why did you make that kind of a joke? Like, come on, you know better. And then I was like, Will Smith.
Again, a lot of important things happened that night. Lot of important things happened that night. And my problem with the situation, other than the fact that I don't think he should have put his hands on another person, is the fact that even if he did it an impulsive moment, that was him deciding that he was going to do something that overshadowed every other great thing that happened that was representation for other people that night. Like the first, like the most predominantly deaf cast won Best Picture at the Oscars. Like Ariana DeBose won Best Supporting Actress. We had two women in a row win Best Director. Yeah, like exactly. So many good, important things like happened that night, and they were overshadowed by his actions. And again, regardless of what you think happened, we could all acknowledge that the entire night was overshadowed by it, because it's all anybody was able to talk about.
Also, speaking of amazing thing that happens, can we talk about Liza Minnelli and Lady Gaga?
Yes.
It was so cute. Oh my God. I just thought it was so sweet and such a wholesome moment.
You know what bothered me?
Yeah.
I think Lady Gaga, you know, was very, you know, good, like she ran, you know, everything she did on stage was good, and she was, you know, she didn't try to make anything of it. But as someone who's like a grandchild of someone with, you know, like dementia, and you think, you know, things that sometimes make them confused, I was kind of annoyed how people on the internet were acting like Lady Gaga did some groundbreaking thing when she was like helping Liza Minnelli on stage, because I'm like, a lot of, you know, children or like grandchildren of people with, you know, things that happens to them when they get older, that's just how you deal with it. So I don't understand why people were like hailing her as this like great woman for doing this, because I definitely thought that it was great that you know, that she was, you know, she ran with it, she didn't try to make it into a spectacle, she was very respectful of Liza and everything, and she didn't try to make her seem like, you know, because obviously she was a bit confused and whatnot. But I don't know, it just, no one needs to build someone up that high for doing something that's very human.
I more also thought it was sweet because, I mean, look, I love Liza
Minnelli. It definitely was sweet. You know, Liza Minnelli is an icon.
Yeah, I love Liza Minnelli. Cabaret is, like, it's an amazing musical.
Yes.
And I also just thought, I don't know, because I mean, I don't know when the last time she was at the Oscars was. And so I just thought it was very sweet that they had her.
Yeah.
And I think
– I loved how many movies they honored that night.
It was two powerhouses in the industry together, and I thought it was just, I don't know, I thought it was very it was very sweet and a very wholesome moment for an Oscars that was very like stressful to watch. And I was like, this was, it was like towards the end, and I was like, okay, this is a very wholesome, nice moment to end the Oscars on that you know, I'll just remember as like, this was really sweet to see Liza Minnelli back on the stage, to see her and Lady Gaga being a little cute together. Like, I don't know. I was just like, this is what it's true to be all about, instead of people punching people in the faces.
Yeah. I think overall there was a lot of good things that happened on that stage that night. Mm-hmm. There was some not great things not that happened so on the stage that night. I mean, I feel like we can learn from the fact that famous people are kind of insane, and they think that they're sometimes feel like their problems are more important than other people's. But anyways, famous people, you know, they're on a different viewpoint of the world than anybody else. I mean, remember the Imagine video that happened when COVID started? Like, so anyways,
yeah,
that was what happened at the Oscars. And, you know, I'm very happy with a lot of the nominations. Also, can I say that out of 23 like awards, I got 19 right.
Wow.
And I'm proud of myself for that one. And I think that we can now move along to something that also happened this week, which was the season 2 of Bridgerton just got released, and obviously watched it all in 2 days.
Yeah, me too. Favorite season.
Same.
Way better than the first one.
Others are saying that it's not as good because of like how like the slow burn, but I thought that they had so much chemistry.
Yes, especially since the actors,
and it was like worth Anthony it was gay. Worth it. Yes, oh my God. And that, like, just shows, like, if you don't know,
then a talented actor.
What? Anthony Bridgerton,
he can have so much chemistry with a person who he is not attracted to in any way. But yeah, it was just the first season, so like I liked it, but more just in like
I mean, I think we both liked the first season enough to be able to watch the second season.
Yeah.
Because I know you didn't really like Daphne at all. Did you like her more this season?
What?
Did you like her more this season though?
Yeah. Well, she wasn't. I just found her very.
No more baby bangs.
Yeah. I also am not a fan of her style of characters. I don't really like the goody two shoes, little innocent. Like, that character just kind of annoys me. I like characters who just have a little bit more oomph to them, which is why, like, I love Eloise. And so I loved Kate as a character. I thought that she was also, I think, the way, first of all, the actress who plays her, Simone Ashley, literally gorgeous, drop dead beautiful.
She is, like, oh my God, so gorgeous. Her bone structure, oh my God.
Oh my God, like and the way that all of her outfits just, like, they looked perfect with her skin tone, everything. She looked like she was glowing.
Like, yeah, I really loved the Sharma sisters.
They were, I really hope we get to see more of that whole family next season, because I really don't want them to do what they did with Daphne. I have a feeling they won't, just because, like, now that she's the Vicomtesse.
Well, she said that she's going to be in the next season.
Oh, I didn't even know that. Okay,
that's great. Yeah, they an interview, they asked her if we're going to see more of her and, like, Anthony in the next season, and she said yes.
Oh, thank God. Okay, good.
Also, did you see they're making a prequel about the Queen?
Yes! I'm so excited. About,
like, her, like, the societal shift in, like, when she met the king who she eventually married.
I am very excited. I think it's going to be very good. I think, I think people are always, like, very
Hey, guys, watch season 2 of Bridgerton. It's literally the best season.
We're also going to, like, I mean, there's only two, but it's thing, so.
Well, the entire season's out, so.
Yeah, also, like, there's just no way. Just stop
listening if you don't want to hear.
Yeah.
I heard that also, people got mad, though, like, in regards to the books, because, again, I have not read the books. But people were saying that, you know, this season was a slow burn, and then it ended up being sort of a love triangle-y situation. But people were saying that in the books, there wasn't really a love triangle because that Edwina realized early off, on, that she wasn't right for Anthony. Yeah. Whereas, like, they ran with it till almost the end of the season.
Yeah, that part did bother me a bit. I was like, okay, I was like, I really don't like how far they're letting it go. I was like, I would have rather it either have not been her sister, or that it just got resolved sooner. But I don't necessarily want them to have gotten together sooner. I think that they got together at the right time, and their storyline as a couple was perfect. But I think Edwina and Anthony should have, like, broken it off a little bit earlier, like, before literally their wedding day.
Ooh, there was just a big sound. Did you hear that? I think you might have moved the wire. Sorry.
Sorry if you heard that. I think, you know, I think it should not have been literally the wedding day where they broke up, just because I think
it was wedding day. Oh, maybe that just made me think. Can I add something really quick? Yeah. The We Don't Talk About Bruno performance, the Oscars, was horrible, and I don't know why they didn't just sing the actual song.
I thought it was funny, but I mean, I also didn't watch the movie. And,
like, I like Meg Thee Stallion, but I don't understand changing the entire song to, like, give it a rap verse and then randomly make the song about the Oscars instead of just making it the song. The song went to number one on the Billboard Hot 100 because people liked the song. Anyways.
Yeah. I mean, I know my roommate who's, like, obsessed with the movie, Emily, she was like, well, this is so weird. I literally hate this. But I mean, me and my other roommate, Celia, thought it was funny, but we hadn't seen the movie, so we didn't really, like, have any... like, our opinions aren't valid. We just thought it was funny because, like, we were like, oh, this is so weird.
But yeah, they ruined it for no reason. Anyways,
back to Bridgerton. So I think, had they broken them up a bit sooner, then there could have been, like, a little bit of a gap before they got fully together. But I just think, like, I was kind of like, oh, I feel so bad. Like, I know this is going to cause such a, like, a rift between the two siblings.
But I also do love the fact that even though sometimes a slow burn can, like, either happen, like, you know, people can get together too early and you're like, that wasn't really a chase. And sometimes it can happen too late where you're like, I don't care anymore. Like in Sex Education, when Maeve and Otis finally got together, spoiler alert, if you haven't watched it yet, but it came out like in the summer, so I don't care. Like when they finally got together, I was like, this was like three seasons in. I don't care anymore. Like, I don't care about their relationship. It should have happened end of season one or end of season two. I thought it was too long gone.
Well, I thought it was too long, but I'm still happy they got together.
I just think it happened when they grew apart too much and I wanted more scenes with them together and it didn't really make that much sense to happen.
Well, yes.
But anyways, in this sense, because obviously it was within one season and they kept on having like, ooh, almost scenes of them together, it made it so when they did, spoiler alert, end up getting together. I mean, it happens in any happily ever after type stories that people get together in the end. I liked how I still was so excited that it happened.
Yeah.
And I really do love that the slow burn didn't you know, it actually, like, it took hours to get there technically because every episode was, like an hour long, basically. But yeah. It still felt worth it. Like, it didn't feel like it took too long. It felt like it was good, actual, well-done slow burn with so much chemistry. They had so much chemistry without even kissing, which is, like, very well
done. And I also feel like they got together in the exact way that their two characters would. Like, I think if they'd gotten together any sooner, it would not have been in character. Like, if, you know... Kate had decided, oh, like, screw this, I love him, whatever. Like, both of them have this such a big martyr complex where they will sacrifice their own happiness every single opportunity they get if somebody else that they love will be happy. And I think it took they had to both individually deconstruct the idea that they had of their own happiness in order for them to get together. Mm-hmm. And I think had they gotten together any sooner, it wouldn't have been as impactful and as it felt very real to the characters. And I was I was so invested in them because I was I feel like I've watched two people grow together and I cannot wait to see the rest of their lives unfold in these in the same. Later seasons.
Because I'm also happy they got rid of the baby bangs and the really big sideburns this season, because it made Anthony so much more attractive without those ugly sideburns.
God, those nasty sideburns. Yeah.
But I also love the performances put in this season. Like, I know it's this whole romantic type Regency era type kind of show, but I think there is great acting in that show.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
And I know some people were annoyed that there was so much of the Featherington family this season, but I was intrigued with some of it.
Sometimes it
went a bit too long, but sometimes it was like, ooh, what's gonna happen? Ooh.
Yeah, I was definitely more intrigued in their family than I was before. Cause this whole literal Ponzi scheme that they were kind of trying to do, or scam, I was very intrigued. Cause I was I wanna know how they get themselves out of this hole. And I was also Penelope, you poor child, your family literally sucks and you can't do anything about it. But she did piss me off towards the end.
You know what bothers me? Nicola Coughlin, I think that's how you say her name, who plays Penelope, is beautiful.
Yeah.
And I feel like all the stuff they put her in does not accentuate her figure as well as it could.
Yeah. Also, the yellows are
not the color. Yeah, they're not complimenting at all. I just think that I don't know, what the stuff they put her in does not complement the way she looks, because she's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. I also, speaking of her, I was I watched a YouTube video that was just someone who read all the Bridgerton books and was I read the Bridgerton books, so you don't have to. And she was talking
you need to watch
about
that.
I'll send it to you. It's an hour long. She talks about the first season of the show in the first 20 minutes. So I just skipped to the book parts because I've already seen the first season. Anyways, so it she was talking about Colin and Penelope's book, because they obviously get together, whatever. And how in the book, basically it's Colin goes away and he comes back and Penelope has kind of reinvented herself, and she has kind of become a lot more confident in herself. And I think she just, without the without Colin being there and having this her turning into a little scared little 12-year-old girl, she kind of grows into a more headstrong person. And I think that's why they're making her character so mousy and kind of unconfident, and it's reflecting definitely in the way she carries herself and the clothes that she's wearing. But the one thing that does annoy me is that they make her lose a bunch of weight in that book.
I don't think they're gonna do that this time around, though, because they've changed a lot of things, Anthony, who he gets with, I don't know the name of the person that he gets with, in the Viscount Who Loved Me, his book. But I know that they said in interviews that originally wasn't South Asian characters.
No, she was just
completely
a white lady.
Changed it so we could have the Sharma sisters.
Yeah,
and I think they're incredibly beautiful. And I saw people online being it was people who are Indian, South Asian, people saying online that they loved the fact that they were seeing women who, you know, they weren't, it wasn't stereotyped, there was no stereotypes, that they were looked at as desirable because they were desirable. And mm-hmm. I love that people got to see themselves in those characters because they deserve it. And again, I don't think they're going to make Penelope lose any weight because
I really hope they don't, because
I don't think they're going to.
In the video, the girl who's like doing the YouTube video, she said that it doesn't even add anything to the story, because it's not like, oh, Colin only notices her now, oh, she's only getting guys now. It's literally just so that they,
because I think that because they're gonna make her be like, she's desirable, but she's also not, you know, she doesn't, you don't have to be, basically you don't have to be thin to be desirable. I think they're gonna,
and I think
like show that kind of representation.
I very much hope that they erase Eloise's book and throw it into the fire. I heard
people saying that they hate her book. Yeah. I liked her in that Theo guy, spoiler
alert. I want her and Theo, not her and Philip Crane.
Okay, that footman though, the guy who was like with the he was also kind of looking at her a certain way.
Which one is that?
The guy who was like taking her around in the carriage.
Oh, yes.
He also kind of looked a certain way at her, so I was like,
"Well, look, in my opinion, Eloise
is hilarious.
A hardcore lesbian."
You know what? I would support that. So.
And I was like, this woman,
Benedict, in the first season, I thought that he was gonna like get together with that guy, and then all of a sudden,
me too.
He was with that girl.
I was so confused, because that is one thing that I've seen people critique the show for, because they're like, Shonda is very good, like she creates a lot of very inclusive stories where a lot of different people become seen, but the one area that Bridgerton has lacked is in their LGBTQ+ representation. And I understand it's a Regency show, obviously that's very hard to incorporate in a way that's realistic, but at the same time, Shonda has stated in the beginning of when the show started that the show is not meant to be historically accurate. You know, it's more supposed to be historically accurate to what history the book created.
Yeah.
So I think it would not be hard for them to incorporate some sort of, because they got close. And I thought it would have made perfect sense for Benedict's character to be a little bit not on the straight and narrow. And because, you know, he's a wild artist, he does all this stuff, especially him being a man gives him a lot more freedom. So I would have thought, oh, it's perfect for it to be, you know, he ends up with, or it doesn't have to be who he ends up with, just like a little bit of an actual storyline. I was just like a little bit frustrated, but I think, you know, I trust in Shonda Rhimes, and I'm hopeful because they, you know, she is very aware of the things that, because I think a lot of the problems people have with the first season, they definitely, the people who made Bridgerton, recognized them and solved them in ways that were not like fan servicey, but in ways that were like, just did a lot of good things for the show. So I have high hopes.
I think it's really well made.
Yeah,
I think it's a genuinely good show.
For it continuing.
And I also like the fact that even though this season was technically, other than like a scene or two, was a lot less like raunchy in the sex, mm-hmm. in the sense that sex, because I was about to say the word sex, there was a lot less sex scenes this season, but there was still enough, like, because of all the scenes between Kate and Anthony where you're like, oh, is it going to happen? Is it not?
It
and just
it was so much like,
it was still sensual without having to have this, like, sex scenes. And I also like the fact that I didn't have to be worried about, like, watching it somewhere where I would have to, like, turn it off because someone was there.
Exactly. And I didn't feel like – and when they did have sex scenes –
and it didn't take anything away from it.
And they didn't seem like they were sex scenes for the sake of, like, oh, it's Bridgerton, we have to throw it in. They felt very, like – they were very well done, especially, like, their first sexy moment in the, like, little – grass or whatever. I thought was like very fitting.
Yeah, and at that point we were like, okay, they're gonna give this to us at a good
also,
time.
I was surprised they have premarital sex.
Scandalous. But I guess at that point everyone in their like circle knew that the reason why whatever happened was because of
them
too.
Like,
that
oh,
it wasn't.
Scandalous.
Yeah, I guess because they weren't caught, it wasn't.
Yeah, well, I mean, she did tell her mom, and I mean, the guys are allowed to have sex as much as they want.
But I guess her mom wasn't as flabbergasted because, you know, she was like shunned because she didn't marry someone of wealth.
Exactly.
Anyways,
I also
guys,
feel
the
like
last
there
thing...
were so many other issues going on that was the least. stories.
The last thing I want to turn to is the fact that at the time that we were recording this, Harry Styles has – well, he has a new album coming out on May 20th called Harry's House, which I'm very excited for. Yes. But he has a new single called As It Was, which is coming out, I guess, in 5 hours from now. And it's been about 2.5 years since he released new music, and I'm over moon that he's releasing this. Stan Twitter exploded, I think. I don't know. I'm not really on Twitter anymore, but I am on Instagram and follow up-to-date accounts, and everyone seems to be very, very, very excited. There's a music video coming out for it, too. I hope it's a good era. It seems from the snippet, from the teaser that we got of the song, it sounds kind of disco. And if Harry's having his disco era, like modern disco, like MASH era, like I'm here for it. Because we saw how like successful like Dua Lipa's Future Nostalgia era was. And if Harry does something similar-ish to that kind of sound, because that's what's kind of popular-ish now, but also like sticking to what he wants to make, I think that could go really, really well for him.
Oh, yeah.
I'm very excited for it. He's wearing like a red sparkly jumpsuit in the teaser for his new video. The teaser sounds a little bit like Take On Me.
Oh, really? Oh, I love that song.
Yeah. That's what the teaser sounds a little bit like.
If you listen to it. Okay, I'm excited.
Also, there was this little Harry Styles. He was like spitting on a thing. Yeah. He was like spitting on a whatever, and people edited him into a microwave.
Oh my god.
It was so funny.
Yeah, Harry Styles is also, he's been very good at like genre bending with music and kind of like, he's very creative with his music composition, which is something I very much appreciate.
I love what he does. I love all the people that love him, because I love the fact that he's always been a giant Fleetwood Mac fan, and then he became really close with Stevie Nicks to the point where she literally calls him like, like basically her son, which is like amazing. That he got like Mick Fleetwood to like do modeling for his brand Pleasing. Which is pretty cool, because I'm sure he wouldn't do that for just anyone. He's become, in the past year, he was already giant, like already most people knew him, and he became like 10 times as bigger in the past year, which is like insane. And I'm happy for him, and I'm sure things are just gonna go up for him, and I'm sure this next era of his is gonna be successful.
Also, I think this is our last podcast episode.
It is, and I'm sad about that. And
me too.
When guys, Amy's going, she's leaving me, and she's going to Vancouver next year to do the Vancouver Film School program, which they do through Laurier for a year. But I'm still gonna make her take her mic with her so we can do our podcast next year.
Oh yes, I don't even know if I can am allowed to do that, but I will see. I will try, and I will throw a hissy fit. Because that's how you get things done.
That's how you get things done. Throw a hissy fit. So yeah, there's a lot of, we finally had like really good content to talk about this week, which I'm like really excited for. Oh, and also just a really small thing, everyone. So the first episode of Moon Knight came out on Disney Plus. MCU show starring Oscar Isaac. He's really hot. Love him.
Ethan Hawke. And it was with long hair. Is really so hot.
Debatable. The first episode was really good. I was really surprised. I was like, God. In it the entire
I'm loving
time.
The horror vibes.
I was into it.
I was spooked really in a good way.
I'm not gonna say exactly what happened, but I was I'm confused looking forward to what they do
in a good way.
Yeah, so anyway guys, you know, lots of exciting things happened this week. Thank you for listening to our last episode of Highly
our
Caffeinated
gabbering.
This year. Yeah, and
our
we
annoyingness
hope that you can, you know, hear us babble on again about everything pop culture and movies and film and music, because that's what we love talking about. And thanks for listening, guys.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.